Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. What a joy. I've got two people here. One is Dave Eggers, and the other is the man about whom he's written his new book, The Monk of Mocha. The Monk of Mocha might as well be Mokhtar Alkanshali. And Mokhtar has told stories to Dave Eggers. Dave Eggers has an ear that is triggered by a good story. He knows about the world that most people don't know, and so he is obligated to tell stories about that world in addition to his own stories. These are essentially an alteration between fiction and nonfiction. And The Monk of Mocha is a nonfiction book about a young Yemeni American who learns that Yemen is the place 500 years ago where coffee originates. Yes?
Well, there is a difference of opinion. And whether it's Yemen or Ethiopia, so depending on which side of the Red Sea you're on, you'll have a different answer. But I think I'm the only Yemeni who thinks the plant starts in Ethiopia. But the first people to brew coffee, to cultivate it, and to make this wonderful drink that will change your life, were these Sufi Muslim monks who lived in Yemen. And for those listening, there's actually a city called Mocha, a port in Yemen.
Well, the first thing I learned, raise your hand if you know this, is that coffee is a fruit. I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's a berry. It grows on a tree, and the berries are of different colors as they ripen. From green, what comes next?
It becomes a kind of a yellow color, then a more of an orange, and then a kind of pink. But when they're ripe, when they're fully, you know, sweet, they're like a dark ruby red.
And many of the farmers, they hadn't been raising coffee in Yemen. It's a tradition that lapsed in favor of something called QAT. How do you say that?
Qat.
And what is it?
Qat is a, depending on who you ask, can be a mild stimulant or a drug, but it's an amphetamine, a plant that grows in Yemen and also East Africa.
You chew on the leaves. It takes a long, it's like you buy a bush. It's like a little, it's like a house plant that you have to eat basically the whole house plant and soak in the juice from the plant. It's really arduous actually to enjoy. We did it in Ethiopia, but it's just a plant. You're just chewing on a plant. But yeah, these cot plants have taken over much of the farmland that used to be devoted to coffee.
That's Dave Eggers. And when I was reading the book, it sounded like people get stoned.
A lot of the men, especially in Yemen, will chew cot all afternoon. And the problem is that it uses a lot of water, and a lot of the limited income of the men in Yemen goes to buying cot. And this isn't a plant that's exported that much, and it doesn't really provide a net good for the world like coffee does.
Mokhtar is sort of a ne'er-do-well. He goes to school. He doesn't like school. He comes and goes in his life. He becomes a doorman at a very posh San Francisco apartment building called the Infinity. And gradually, he comes to know, as most of us do, that if he's going to be anything, he's going to have to connect the country of his ancestors with the country in which he lives. In other words, we're going to have to forge the bridge between Yemen and the United States, and the bridge you discover is coffee. It becomes an obsession, yes? You learn everything that there is to know about coffee. You even become the first Arabic Q grader.
Like a coffee sommelier, like the expert of experts.
The highest level. And there are no other Arabs, despite the fact that the coffee is grown in Arabic countries. And the test for this is in 21 parts, and you have to recognize grades of coffee, but all of this is in preparation for the heart of the book, which is that Mokhtar is going to go to Yemen and see if the coffee grown there is of high grade enough to be specialty coffee, third wave coffee. And in the course of it, he gets caught in the middle of the Yemeni civil war, about which he knows still less than he knows about coffee. So he goes there to be educated and comes home telling stories. Among the people who hear the stories is Dave Eggers.
Well, we had a very, you know, momentous reunion. We'd met some years before Mokhtar headed out on his coffee journey. He was working at the Infinity when we met, but when he got back, he had just narrowly escaped with his life and a few suitcases full of coffee. And we spent a few hours in Oakland outside the Blue Bottle there, and it was a multi-layered story, not just like of his incredible daring do, really, to get out of the country and escape, and tried twice to escape, got out the second time on a skiff across the Red Sea. But I think just as interesting was his self-invention. He's 26 years old. He decides he's going to be a coffee importer, that he's going to teach himself everything there is to know about coffee cultivation, and he's going to try to lift up a lost art in the country of his ancestors.
Yes, and not only that, in his family here in America, he's begun, we all know this moment, this is a universal moment, he's begun to be regarded as a black sheep. Why isn't he going to law school? We forget that the story of America is the story of someone who comes from somewhere else, who comes here and figures out how to live. And generation by generation, there's a melting point, not just between different cultures, but between a son and the ancestry of his grandparents. That this is a hugely emotional thing that takes place. Our parents don't know necessarily how to teach us. Our grandparents do. So this book, The Monk of Mocha by Dave Eggers, is a kind of, I thought, astonishing book, because it took me to Yemen to learn about the political factions and understand they're not subjects for newspaper articles. These are tribes. When you go out into the backwoods, you learn about tribal behaviors. They look at Mokhtar and they see he's Yemeni. He gets through certain checkpoints, but not others.
In Yemen, when I was younger, going back and spending time with my grandfather, it really was a radical transformation for me. And it's very interesting hearing you say that grandfathers are the people we should seek out. It's really something really wise to hear you say that. And I was very fortunate to be and spend time with him and as a young kid, you know, my teenage years. And so later on, when I went back to Yemen, I was able to put on my Yemeni hat, or in my case, turban, and fit in. And in those checkpoints, you know, it's sometimes a matter of the wrong word and the way you say the word, and because there are different factions. And I was fortunate to be able to dance this line and go between these different words.
You're a very canny guy, Dave. Did you know that you were talking to America and Americans about how to understand Yemen through the guise of talking about world domination in specialty coffee?
I did. Coffee is something that, I don't know, probably 90% of us drink in the morning, and it's something that everybody enjoys, and there's a lot of people that enjoy it at a very high level, like our coffee aficionados, more and more so. But it's also something that more and more we care about where our food comes from. But this is sort of like, for a lot of us, the last thing where people say, give me coffee, instead of when you order wine, you said, I'd like a Chardonnay from Napa Valley, or, you know, you're aware of where it comes from, and you care about the farmers, and you are willing to pay something for a certain kind of wine. But coffee is still sort of seen by most of us as a cheap commodity, and the farmers and everything are kind of forgotten. So I thought, yeah, coffee's a way, just like it was a way for Mokhtar to rediscover his ancestry, it was a way for us to learn a little bit as a doorway to a country that we know very little about, and what we do know is usually drones, Al-Qaeda, headlines, things like that. But this is one of the most storied and beautiful countries on earth.
See, I think that you see this person, the first time you meet him, he's a doorman. And that's in your head. Doorman to what? Doorman to what? And eventually, he becomes the doorway to Yemen and the doorway to coffee. You acknowledge that when you started out, you thought that the coffee deal was a lot of nonsense, that people people were faking it, that this was a... and then how did you get convinced?
Even in that first meeting, because we met outside the Blue Bottle, which is like a, you know, roastery and an education center in Oakland, and they were doing what's called a cupping while we were talking about his escape from Yemen. But there's people slurping coffee, you know, and scoring it and spitting it out and all this stuff that looked totally absurd. And I'm a product of like the processed food 70s in, you know, Chicago. We didn't see fresh vegetables. We didn't know anything about food. And so I'm inherently skeptical, wrongfully so, but I am, of any kind of elitism when it comes to food. But what I learned through Mokhtar, even in that first day, because he was showing me the coffee fruit, which I had never seen until that day. He showed me these ruby ripe cherries that were beautiful. And then he showed me pictures of the farmers and told me their stories. And automatically, you realize that scoring coffee, caring how it's roasted, paying more for it, it's all to honor and uplift the farmers, or it should be. If you deal directly with the farmers, if you name their farms and you know where it's coming from, and the roasters trade directly with them, they have an infinitely more dignified life than if they're exploited and their product of their labors is sold on the commodity market for far less than it should be.
Mokhtar visits some 31 farms in his first trip to Yemen, and meets a very quiet and small man who's proud of his fruit, Malik. This grower knows how to grow it right. It's in his blood, it's in his genes, and when it's tested, it gets above a 90% rating. It's among the best coffees in the world, and suddenly Mokhtar knows he has a product to import and export all over the world.
When I met Malik, you know, as a young guy going into these areas, it was very important not to sound arrogant that I'm coming with this knowledge that you know nothing about. Also, it's important for me not to say something I don't know anything about, because they will know. So early on, the first phase was me being more of a sponge and just trying to pick up things. And when I met Malik, he had this like ancient legacy around him of coffee, and he knew, and his cherries were all red, and so I wanted his to be separated out. And surely enough, when we cupped and tested all the samples from all those regions, his was of course the highest scores. And for me, that at that moment, it was a turning point, because I realized I had something here and I could do this work, and coffee can be this bridge from Yemen to the world, and vice versa. And that was an incredible moment. And, you know, eventually I did learn about varietals and elevation and how to grow coffee. But my first visit, and I'm really excited, and I'm about to start this path, and I found my calling now, you know. And I go up to this tree, and I don't know anything about coffee trees. And so halfway in my vision of what I'm going to do in life, one of the farmers comes up and says, Mokhtar, I'm sorry to bother you, but the coffee trees are actually over there. And he points at like some other tree, and you know, so that's one of those embarrassing slips.
And this book, with all of its wonderful storytelling, took me into a culture, not just coffee culture, but the Islam culture, and how all kinds of things. I think, you see, because Mokhtar doesn't drink wine, doesn't drink spirits, the quality of the coffee is the spirits of a different culture. You can perfect coffee when you're not busily perfecting wine.
You know, they first started to call coffee the wine of Islam. And it's actually, the word coffee in Arabic means wine. It's a type of wine.
Oh, kahwa. Fascinating. This is Bookworm. I'm talking with Dave Eggers and Mokhtar Akhanshali about his latest book, The Monk of Mocha. We'll be right back after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Dave Eggers and with Mokhtar Akhanshali, the man about whom he's written his new book, The Monk of Mocha, the gripping tale of Mokhtar Akhanshali's growth from San Francisco doorman to returning to his Yemeni roots. Tell me, again, I'm very capable of error. Yemeni or Yemenis?
Yemenis, plural.
Yemenis roots, thank you. Now, you, Dave Eggers, eventually travel in Yemen. You don't mention that you've done this except in the prologue and the epilogue, but were you caught up in the civil war as well?
We were able to retrace Mokhtar's steps in the Central Valley and Santa Barbara and Djibouti and Ethiopia. In Yemen, you can't get in and out of the capital, and there's no way to do that. It hasn't been possible since they bombed the airports in 2015. But we were able to get into a more remote part of Yemen to experience the culture, at least.
That's one of the things that's so interesting. The attitude in Yemen is they bomb the airport, it'll open again.
Yeah.
You know, there's a kind of ongoing sense that, yes, this is how we live. We live in the midst of destruction, and when it's an appropriate moment, We solve the problems that are the problems that are the consequence of destruction. There's an implicit shrug, yeah?
We talked a lot about it because I would read separately about the Houthi takeover. These are rebels from the north of the country that overtook the capital and now and still hold it today. But all the while, Mokhtar was still operating as a businessman in Sana'a, working at a, you know, processing his coffee at a mill, going to and fro, going to the gym, sleeping in the capital. And I thought, well, wait, what was the change?
I remember when the Houthis took over the presidential palace and the president had resigned and also the prime minister. So I was like, what's going to happen now? There's no government. And then we woke up the next day and the traffic man was there and the policeman was there and everything was normal. And so I realized that there was never a government in the first place, that we have this ancient tribal system that really is more efficient and oftentimes more just than the corrupt government. And that's what allows Yemen to function even till today.
And so many people in America, thinking about innovations that go back to the 50s and the Hills brothers, they don't know what coffee gradation is, and the farmers don't either. And they're selling their product to people whose whole lives are based on underpaying the farmers. So coffee is not the important crop because it doesn't make them enough money. They're living under unbearable, unlivable conditions. So you come and you teach farmers the value of their coffee and how to grow it and how to separate it, how to, you know, stay away from the green berries, that what you're looking for are the red berries, and you show them a ring that you have, where the jewel in the ring, you're wearing it right here and showing it to me, is the color of an appropriately red coffee bean. Mokhtar has to get out of the country to come to America to a coffee convention, and he has to bring the coffee with him. And of course, at every stop, what's this? They're expecting drugs. They're expecting something that can't be exported. What are we to say if you're bringing back infectious coffee beans? It's the difficulty of the world of food, where we try not to respect what other people are growing so that we can get it for cheap prices. Then we are essentially exploiters of those people, and we're not paying them to grow their best product.
That's exactly it. You know, the fact that you and many other people, you know, don't know that coffee comes from, it's a fruit, a cherry, and we're so disconnected that, you know, we have different types of coffees we don't know about. And for me, it was trying to find these gems, these special varietals, you know, picked by a special farmer. And I remember one of the earliest visits, I saw these mixed pickings, ripe and unripe. And I told one farmer, I said, hey, if I paid you more money, would you just pick these ripe red cherries for me? And he said, if you paid me more money, I would pick rainbow colored cherries for you.
One of the things that I particularly like about Dave Eggers and his work, not just this book, but his work in the world, is that he's something of a utopian. He believes that if we learn the rights of peoples, we will by our nature want to be supportive of us. It's only in our ignorance is the implicit belief that we mistreat others. And that's one of the thrilling things about this book. It takes us out of the corridors of political power and restores us to the corridors of human interaction.
Mukhtar and I are here just tearing up, you know. Listen, your listeners know you read closer than anybody else, and so we haven't had the book explained back to us this way, and it's very moving, but I immediately think of Studs Terkel's quote. He's a hero of mine, Chicago oral historian that I try to follow in his work a lot. And one of the things he said was, when Americans have the information, they do the right thing. And seldom, well, not seldom, but sometimes we don't have the information. But yeah, I have a sort of a, I don't know if it's naive or silly, but I do always feel like when people really know, or they can see a human behind a policy, or a human that's affected by whether it's a law or the words coming from the White House or policies coming from Washington, if they can see the humans affected, they step up and they do the right thing. But too often I think that it is in the interests of the most callous makers of these laws to divorce us from the human consequences.
Yes, it's established by this book that America is still an exuberant culture, and not just an exuberant culture, a culture that wants to protect, if it can, the American dream. This is a book about a young man who might have gotten lost, who found himself, and also who found someone to help him tell his story. And telling the story is an important part as well. It's an important part of making a subset of culture into a fully participating part of American culture. And for this, I'm very grateful to this book and to my guests, Dave Eggers and Mukhtar Alkanshali, and to the book, The Monk of Mocha. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Monk of Mocha at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my new co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard, who is here today, is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Thanks to my wonderful assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.